Okay, so this is chapter 2, and the content of chapter 2 is the networking standards and the OSI model. And this is just going to lay the framework for the protocols and things that we will learn about in this chapter. The objectives here is to identify organizations that set standards for networking, to describe the purpose of the OSI model and its layers, and explain specific functions belonging to each OSI model layer. Now, the thing to keep in mind about the OSI model is it's not actually, for example, like a protocol that is implemented. It is really just kind of a model that helps us to understand how things work. And a lot of people like to really categorize everything and say, okay, well, this device works at the transport layer. Well, not all devices work at any one layer. A lot of them work among multiple layers, but it's still looking at the layers and how it works helps us understand the whole communication process. Going on with the objectives, we're going to look at understanding how two network nodes communicate through the OSI model. We're going to discuss the structure and purpose of data packets and frames, and we'll describe the two types of addressing covered by the OSI model. Okay. The first thing to look at is standards are really agreements among multiple organizations about how things will work. Generally, what happens in a kind of the life cycle development of a product is a new product will come about, such as wireless networking, for example. And maybe actually it will be first developed by one particular organization. And then other organizations will begin developing it as well. And then once we have multiple organizations and we begin to realize that we need to have some kind of standard so the products from different organizations can interact. And then one of the standards organizations will take it on. They'll develop a committee that will look at the various devices or that have already been developed by the various organizations, and they'll look about what they think should be part of the standard. And then the committee will begin reviewing it and discussing it and deciding what they think the standard should be. And then at some point there's a draft standards document developed, and then that draft standards document goes around and everybody reviews it, and eventually at some point the committee decides, okay, this is it, this is the standard, we've released it. What you'll see as that happens is you'll actually see products come on the market that meet the draft standards. As they begin to get an idea of what those standards are going to be, they'll begin developing devices, such as, for example, the N standard. When it first started coming out, there wasn't actually an official standard. There were draft standards. And so organizations were producing products that met what they thought the standards were going to be, even way ahead of the standard itself having actually been released. And then what you'll see is you'll see at some point the standard will be released, and then you'll see a firmware update available. And so what they'll do is they'll design the product so that later they can issue a firmware update. You implement the firmware update, and your device will come up to actually what the actual standard ended up being. So it's kind of interesting the way the process that goes. Because the standardization, actually coming up with the standards process, takes a longer time than companies want to wait to get a product to market, those products will come out earlier. The other thing that I kind of point out about standards, which is one that I think is kind of interesting, is if a product is truly standardized, we don't generally spend a whole lot of time talking about standards. Fortunately, at this point, we're beginning to see some of that occur in the computer industry, but for example, look at the telephone industry, which has been around a whole lot longer. When you go into a store to buy a telephone, you don't usually turn over the back of the box and check the standards and check the requirements to make sure you can actually plug it in at home and use it. Generally, you just pick one with the features you want and you know it's going to work. Well, there are standards that govern how those telephones work, but they've been in place for so long and they're so closely followed that we don't, as consumers, don't need to spend much time even thinking about it. We just know it works. Now, we also come into play, and I don't know if any of you guys were involved in wireless networking at this point. When wireless networking first came out, we did have some standards issues there because we had wireless phones and we had wireless networks, and there were actually some incompatibility issues that occurred early on. There were people who had wireless phones that didn't work when they deployed their wireless networks, or their wireless networks didn't work because their wireless phones were on similar frequencies, and we had some of those issues that came about. Again, those were standards that weren't fully implemented. Once a standard gets really fully implemented, we don't really have to think about it a whole lot anymore. One that's really proliferated in the last couple of years fairly thoroughly is the Ethernet standard for wired networking. We're going to talk about in this class, we're going to talk about other standards, we're going to talk about ARCNET, we're going to talk about Token Ring, we're going to talk about some of those other standards. At one point in time, you had to make sure that when you purchased a machine and you purchased a network interface card, it was actually compatible with the infrastructure of your network that you were going to put it on. And if your if you had a Token Ring network, you needed to make sure you had a Token Ring network interface card. Well, now everything's pretty much standard on Ethernet, so pretty much every time you buy a machine, whether it's a desktop machine, a laptop machine, or whatever, it's got an Ethernet card built into it, and you don't even have to worry about purchasing one because it's just assumed that the network you're going to put on, it's going to use an Ethernet standard. So that's pretty straightforward, even to the point that we're really not Ethernet, really is not even the description of the standard. It's a generic term that refers to it. We're not even specifically identifying the actual standard anymore because we've gone pretty much beyond that. Okay, some of the standards organizations we see, American National Standards Institute is one of them that we'll look at. We see the EIA and the TIA, and then there's the IEEE, which should be the next slide, or the kind of the three basic ones. IEEE is the one that we're going to see most of the networking standards come from. Your 802.dot standards come from IEEE, so when you look at Ethernet, the 802.2 standards, the 802.3 standards, the 802.11 standards, those all come out of IEEE. When we take a look at backwards back to the ARCNET, that was actually an ANSI standard. A lot of modem standards come out of the ANSI or American National Standards Institute. And then the EIA, TIA really kind of handles electronics. So when we talk about cabling, the various different 568A and B standards, those are EIA, TIA standards that come out of the electronics organizations. And then the ISO, the International Standards Organization, kind of is the companion organization to ANSI, but it represents international standards versus American standards. And then the ITU is another one as well, handles things like radio and TV frequencies, satellite frequencies, networking infrastructure. And the ISO is the Internet Society, which handles internet standards and those types of things. And actually, this one, the IANA and ICANN, Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, again, looking at internet protocols and addressings. Okay. You really don't need to know what all those organizations are in everyday use, other than you need to know that there are sets of standards organizations that govern certain areas. And if you were actually working for an organization that was developing a product, then you would really want to work very closely with those standards organizations. You do kind of want to be familiar with various standards, particularly in new and emerging products, to make sure that they're all going to work together properly. Okay, the OSI model. It's called the Open Systems Interconnection Model. It divides network communication into seven layers, and I guess I should turn the slides on so you can see them, huh? Forgot they weren't on. How many of you worked with the OSI model before? Anybody tell me an idea? Have you had a chance to read Chapter 2 yet? No, okay. Any idea what the physical layer represents?
In a couple of years, but the physical layer actually deals with the data as it travels to the NIC, like whenever it goes to the NIC and whenever it comes to the NIC on the other side.
So everything transporting over the actual physical layer, which is really easy to see in a wired network because you understand the physical layer as being the actual cable, but in a wireless layer, network, the physical layer is still dealing with that actual physical transmission from NIC to NIC, even though it actually doesn't have a physical component to it at that point. What actually the OSI model encompasses, it encompasses everything from the point where the client makes a request for information, and the way that information is arranged into a data packet or something that can be then transmitted down over the actual physical component of the network to the server at the other side. And all of the error checking, communication verifications, and everything that goes on in between. Just to give you an idea, just kind of think about the whole process. How many of you have ever sent an email that didn't get where it was supposed to go? A lot of you. How do you know it didn't get there? You might have gotten a return, an error message come back saying it didn't reach its destination.
Well, I have an AOL account that it never received any email except from AOL.
So therefore, they were blocking everybody in the entire world. So if you have, sometimes maybe how you know it didn't get to its destination is, such as for example in your AOL example, you knew it was very obvious that you weren't getting emails back from other people. You might have sent information back, but nobody else replied to you. You didn't get any information back. At some point you have to say, okay, something messed up in my transmission. Okay. And the first example we actually had, maybe something was incorrectly addressed, so some device out there on the internet recognized that the place that email was being sent to didn't really exist or wasn't able to accept the transmission, so then we got an error message that got sent back to us at our email. Well, kind of all network transmissions are very similar to that, and depending on the protocol you're using, some of the protocols are designed to do many different things. Has anybody ever worked in an organizational email where you could actually see if your email was delivered or verify someone was? Actually, take it back. Let's get out of email, give you a different example. How many of you use an internet chat device, such as MSN or one of the others? You can see when somebody's online. You can actually see when one of your friends comes online, and then you know you can send them a message. Okay. OSI model kind of deals with network communication in very similar ways to those protocols. Those are kind of visible ways that we can see them. There are many different protocols. Some protocols will actually go out and check to see that the receiving machine, the server or the client that they're sending information to, is actually there and available to receive communication and in effect open a session with that other device to begin communication. It's kind of like, are you there kind of thing? Yes, I'm here. Okay, send me your information. And then it will send the information. And that's kind of like being on, AOL or MSN or something like that, and being in the little chat window and being able to chat back and forth. You've checked first to see if your friend's online. Your friend is online. You checked in, and if they're away, they can mark themselves as being away or whatever. But if they've marked themselves as being there and available for communications, you then open a session and you begin chatting back and forth. Another way a device might communicate on the network is to send a message to another device, whether it be a request for information or whatever, and request a confirmation back that that was received. Okay, so that might be kind of like sending an email with a return receipt coming back to get information back to let you know whether or not it actually arrived at its intended recipient. And also inherent in that might also be an error checking process that would give a reply back if it didn't arrive properly, if it got lost in the transmission or corrupted or something else. Many of the protocols have the ability that when it arrives at the intended device, that device can run an error checking routine on it to make sure it not only received it, but that it received it intact in the same way you sent it, that it didn't somehow get corrupted in its transmission around the internet or the network. And then it will send a confirmation back that, yes, not only did I receive your communication, but it passed all of our error checking and security measures and everything appears to be correct. And then other protocols may be even lower overhead, and that they will send a request or send information, but they will do nothing to check and see if it arrived. It's an intended recipient. The only way they will ever know is if they actually get the response back that they hope to get. In other words, you send a request out for a web page. The only way you know that your request was received by the server is that you actually get the web page back. A lot of times your browser will time out, or it will say, I can't find that device, or whatever. but that's, you know, your browser is checking that. So many different ways. The OSI model kind of governs that whole process. It kind of sets up the whole process by which we can develop those various different communication methods and ensure that the communications actually arrive where we want them to arrive, that we they get the information about who we are and what it is we're wanting to transmit, as well as the ability to check and verify that that transmission is actually complete and accurate. Here's where it kind of gives you the, on page 14 of the slides, the theoretical representation of what happens between two nodes communicating on a network. It doesn't describe the type of hardware or software that should support each layer. It just describes what should happen at that place in the communication. I love the little caveat down here that, remember, the model is imperfect. So you can't make everything fit into the model, but it is a way to understand what's going on. Okay, so here's the way the model looks. On page 15 of the slides, you have one device that's instigating a transmission. At the application layer, now the application layer here is not referring to like Microsoft Office, it's referring to the actual operating system as the application layer of generating the information. It begins, and each of these layers has different information that's attached to the packet. So the application layer comes with the actual data we want to transmit, such as an email message. As it goes down these layers, it sets up things, for example, what type of coding is it using for the data? Is it using ASCII characters? Is it using EBCDIC characters? What kind of communication is it using in the data? Then the session layer, is it actually going to open a session, or is it simply going to send the transmission? Adds other information as it comes down to the network layer, and it adds an address of what device it's sending it to. And for example, if this is a web page request, what is the address it's sending the request to? Is it www.sfcc.edu? Does it need to, and then it may actually request for the actual IP address and embed that in there so it knows where it's going. And then it begins to format it to go actually on what is the transmission media it's going on. Oh, it's going to be transmitted on Ethernet, so it's going to format that packet to transmit on an Ethernet network. And then that transmission will be forwarded through, and as it comes back up, as the Ethernet board receives it, uses the information it needs, it takes that information off. As it passes it up and verifies that it's the correct network address, it takes that information off, and then it passes it on up to here, and it unencodes the data, and then it passes it back up to the application layer so it can actually work with the data. So at the whole point, it's like building the packet and then unbuilding the packet as it uses it. At the application layer, it's actually putting together the data portion of the packet. It's getting it ready so that it's in the format that the other service or application on the other end can read the data. For example, if we're asking for a web page, it's actually putting it in, making sure it's in the proper format for HTTP server to read it. So it's putting the data together in the proper format. At the presentation layer, it's formatting the data stream and getting it ready. It's, you know, for example, here it talks about if you actually have a graphics file in the translation. It's putting the graphics file into a data stream so that it can be formatted and passed along over the network. It's also looking to see whether or not there's going to be any kind of encryption. If you're encrypting the data so it can't be read over the network, it will encrypt it at that point and encrypt and prepare that data packet ready to go. Session layer is what's going to coordinate between the two nodes and determine, are we going to check first to see if the other device is available and ready to receive a transmission, or are we simply going to send the transmission and ask for confirmation, or are we just going to send it and wait and see if we get our data back? That's going to happen at the session layer, determining what that process is going to be and then implementing whatever pieces need to be implemented at that process. There are some protocols that will actually create a little dummy packet that doesn't actually have any data in it that basically checks to see if the other device is out there. When that one comes back and says yes, then it will actually generate the data and actually send it. The session layer and the transport layer actually worked hand in hand, and there are many models that say that they're not actually two different layers. They're actually one layer, because the transport layer is the one that kind of checks and makes sure everything happened properly. It verifies if you're sending a packet or data over the network and your protocol requires to have a confirmation that it arrived properly. It's the transport layer that actually does that error checking process, just to make sure that it actually arrived reliably and properly. Okay. The network layer is where it determines exactly how it's going to send it out. When you type into your browser, you type in www.sfcc.edu, the network layer takes that information. It determines the actual IP address of where it's supposed to go. It makes sure it's a valid address. It makes sure it's a unique address. It determines what's the physical address. Every device actually, particularly on the internet, actually has three names associated with it. The first one might be www.sfcc.edu. The second one might be an IP address, which might be 172.29.33.42 or something like that. And then the last one is an actual MAC address, which is actually something that's hardwired into the network address card. The domain name or DNS name and the IP address are assigned by us as administrators. The physical layer address, the MAC address, can never change. It is hardwired into the device, so it very securely makes sure we know where we're going. The network layer has the process of taking that address that we're familiar with, the www.sfcc.edu, and boiling it down into an address that our network protocols can deal with, and the MAC address, and ensuring that that data packet gets to the proper location. The data link layer is the last kind of step on the computer in preparing the packet to be sent out. It puts it in the proper frame format, making sure that each bit in the data stream has the proper information in it where it needs to be. It will add error checking and control information, and it will add padding information if it needs to make sure that the bits are the exact right length that they need to be. And then the physical layer is the part that handles actual making the transmission from the network card across the transmission media or reading it back off of the network card. Okay, page 37 just kind of gives an overview of the layers. Again, remembering what's happening is the transmission device is creating all this as it goes down, and when it gets to the other end, it's opening it up and reading it again. So here we go. Okay, that's the one I was looking for. This shows you kind of the process of creating the data packet. The sending machine starts out here. It has the actual data that it wants to transmit. Either it's a request for information or it's actually information it's transmitting it. It adds a header that talks about how the application layer created this data packet. Gets the presentation layer. The presentation layer adds any information it needs to add to the packet. Gets the session layer. Session layer adds any information it needs to add to the packet. Transport layer adds any information it needs to add to the packet. The network layer adds information it needs to add, which includes things like the actual address of where it's going to. When we get down to the data link layer, it may be adding information both on the beginning and the end, and then that data is actually transmitted across the network. When it gets back to the receiving machine, again, as it goes up each layer, the data link layer reads what it needs to read, it strips it off, passes it to the network layer, reads what it needs to read, strips it off, passes it up to the next layer, reads that, strips it off, and so on. The interesting thing is this packet is actually stripped down and rebuilt many times as it goes through the network. It's usually only stripped down to this point because, for example, when if we're at this machine here and we transmit data, first place it's going to show up over here is at the switch or the hub. What the switch or the hub is going to need to do is it's going to need to strip the data link layer stuff, get up here so it can read the address, the network address. It's going to read the network address and say, well, do we know where this network address is? If it turns out that this network address is in this complex that it knows about, it's going to then rebuild it and send it back out the way it needs to go. If it says, okay, this is a network address that's not in our local area, we don't know where it is, it's then going to rebuild the packet and pass it up to the next level router. The next level router is going to take it, it's going to strip this information off, pull the network address out, say, do I know where this network address is? If it does, it'll build the packet back down again and send it off. If it doesn't, it's again going to build the packet back down again and send it up to the next level router. And in that way, it's going to rise through hierarchy through the internet until it finds a router that is aware of where it exists. And when it finds a router that's aware of where that network exists, it will then send it back out. The interesting thing is, as you sit down at your workstation, you type www.sfcc.edu, and all of this happens in a fraction of a second. It builds the request, it builds the packet, it sends it out, it goes to your, if you're sitting at home, it goes to your router at your ISP, your router at your ISP says, do I know where this address is? If it doesn't, it passes it upline, and if that router, until it finds a router that knows where the address is, and then it passes the data all the way back out to the machine that it's intended to, that machine gets the request, says, oh, I want this web page, it repackages that packet back up with the information, the data for the web page in it, sends it back out to your machine, and all that happens in a fraction of a second. So it's kind of amazing. And that packet's, who knows how many miles it's traveled. It could have traveled hundreds of miles in that time frame. Questions, comments about the OSI model? Okay, frame specifications. If you look in this model, you'll see that when we get down here to the bottom, all of this information is building. As it goes down, what happens, it's kind of a little misleading the way they do it here. At the application layer, it creates a data packet here. When it comes down to the presentation layer looks at this whole area, the data packet and the stuff the application layer added, almost like it's the data packet. When it gets down to this level, to the session level, it looks like not only the data here, but all the header information that's added, almost like it's a bulk of data. So each layer doesn't even recognize anything within the piece that gets handed to it. It only looks at its own stuff. When we talk about frame specifications, when it gets to the very bottom, we're actually then looking at how the different protocols work and how the different protocols communicate, and building the rest of that packet to represent its requirements. So each one will have actually different information in different spots. Let me see if I can go forward. Okay, so I was wondering if the slides might give an idea of what goes in what. And basically, an Ethernet frame or a token ring frame will have similarly the same information, but they might be at a different bit in the packet, and it might also have different information based on how that particular protocol works. The last thing kind of covered in this particular series of slides just does an overview of what some of the various different networking specifications are. And it kind of starts off with 802.series. The one that we see most common right now is 802.2. That's the basic Ethernet standard. 802.3 was traditionally Ethernet, but 802.2 is what's actually implemented in most Ethernet networks. And then, of course, 802.11, did they have on the next page, is your wireless network standards. Those are the ones we're going to see most commonly. So we're going to talk about some of the others. Some of the others are implemented either in various different peripheral type networks, as well as some more fault tolerant networks like token ring LANs and stuff may be used in some more fault tolerant networks. questions? Did you, anybody, questions or comments? No? Okay. All right, just a summary of this chapter. The main things to get out of this chapter is to understand how the OSI model can be used to understand how data is transmitted around the network, kind of an understanding that the data is actually formatted into a bit stream of electronic data impulses that actually communicate the data, and that based on the protocol we're implementing, whether it's Ethernet or Token Ring or various other protocols, that data is going to be transmitted in different ways, and that as that data transmits across the network, various devices are going to open it up. They're going to read certain amounts of data. They're going to rewrite that data based on where it needs to go next and transmit it through. And that's kind of it for Chapter 2. This is kind of the heaviest, I think, theory section of the course, except for when we get into looking at topologies. But topologies have kind of more of a physical component, too. You do in your chapter, let me hop out of the slides here real quick. You have two assignments that are due next week from this section. The first one is simply the student presentation assignment. And that one, you're not actually going to be creating any actual content on your web pages. You're just setting up the framework for your student presentation area. I've given you a short tutorial that shows you how to use the built-in HTML editor in WebCT to create a student page. You can create a basic page. You can add a second page and link it to your first page. You can upload a PDF file and link it to your page. If you go out here to the main page, you'll see the student presentation area. If you scroll down, you will see I've put out a sample student presentation for you to take a look at. And that's the one I actually built in the tutorial that I gave you a link to so you can see. Now, when you create your student presentation pages, I realize that some of you have more HTML and web publishing experience than others. Some of you have no HTML experience, which is why I gave you the tutorial on how to use the built-in utilities in WebCT to create your page. If you have more experience and want to create something really fancy, that's up to you. You can do anything you want to. You can create a really elaborate web page, zip it all up, upload it in WebCT, and unzip it and let it run up there. It will should work fine if you link it and zip it properly. If you do decide to do something more elaborate, keep in mind that you're responsible for making it work. If you do something really fancy with graphics and all kinds of stuff and it doesn't work, you're going to get points off for it not working. If you do something really basic and it conveys the information we need to convey and it works, then you're going to get a good grade because it works and it does everything you want it to do. So if you decide to do something really fancy, you've got to make sure it works or it's going to hurt you. So be aware of that. Okay, the last piece, the other assignment that's there is fairly straightforward. I have one piece to add to this assignment today, so yours may not be coming up live yet. In this assignment, I've given you, it's an IP config assignment. And the assignment here is in a PDF file. And it will give you step-by-step instructions for what you're supposed to do. There's two parts to this assignment. First of all, you're going to sit down at your computer and you're going to use IP config to pull the MAC address and some other information off of your computer. And then I've given you some images, and I need to make one more image and upload it today. I didn't have the right card at home to make the last image when I worked on this. And I'm going to give you three images of three devices that I want you to look at and figure out what the MAC address is on those devices. So you're going to look at that information. I've given you a utility in here, and it's a utility called Foxit Reader. And there's a link here for a tutorial that Charles Schultz developed showing you how to use Foxit Reader. And I'm just going to bring it up here and show it to you really quick because I want to point out the only thing that doesn't work on this tutorial is he has you actually download it from the menu on WebCT. If you look in your assignment, you'll see that I actually included the Foxit Reader executable right in your assignment. So you're going to download it from there. Once you've downloaded it from there, and you save it to your disk, everything else in this tutorial works exactly the same way. You're actually going to install it and select your assignments and use it to annotate the assignment. What it will do, what Foxit Reader does, is it allows you to open up a PDF file. It gives you a text tool, and you can type anywhere in that PDF file. So when you open up the ipconfig PDF file in Foxit Reader, you can then type all your answers in the PDF file. You can save it, and you can upload it and submit your assignment. Does that make sense? Okay. All right, I'm going to turn this little recorder off for a minute.